Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What's up, everybody? Peter Boll here, all the way from Tübingen, Germany. I'd like to welcome you guys back to In My Spikes podcast, episode 3. Today, I'm actually quite excited because I'll be speaking to my coach, Justin Rinaldi, and it's a great opportunity to catch up on everything, the Olympics, the culture that he's trying to build with the Fast 8 Truck Club, just get his ideas and insights into especially what we could have done better, if there was anything for that final. And as well as new members in the team, we've got a few new members that hopefully Justin will be announcing, and what the future looks like for us, you know, both on and off the track. So it's going to be pretty exciting. Also, Justin's fatherhood now, being a father, and how he's going to manage and balance all that. So yeah, be a general conversation with my coach. So looking forward to it, and I hope you enjoy it. Let's get this started. What do I want to know?
What do you want to know? You should know it all. You know it all.
Now, I guess, what do people want to know? We might as well start with Fast 8 Track Club and then go back to the Olympics. Are we going to announce the new members?
You can.
Well, Jeff Risley is the newest, and then Luke Matthews.
Yeah, so Luke was, you know, he was coached by his mum. He's had a few injury issues lately, and I think his society wanted to make a small change. I think, you know, him and his mum were working really well, but I think it was really hard to have that relationship between being a mum and being a coach. And I think Liz handled it really well, but sometimes Luke wasn't handling it as well as maybe he could have. So I think he decided to make a change and just see what he could do running with us.
Did he reach out to you, or how did that work?
Yeah, he reached out to me. He just gave me a call one day and said, look, you know, he wants to make a change. He's thinking a number of different options. I've always told Luke that I believe he can run 3:29. I've probably told him that for the last 2 or 3 years. But I said, you know, to run 3:29, you've got to run 1:44 as well. You know, you can't just run, you know, 1:45, 1:46. You've got to run fast. And, you know, the standard of running in 800 and 1500 Australia right now, you probably have to run 3:29 to make a team.
Yeah. And the 800 isn't going to be easy either.
Yeah, 800 is tough. You know, like Jeff was 1:44.8 and he was the third on the team. You know, wow. So it's tough.
So now what's the goal for us to get three guys from Fast 8 Track Club in the team?
Yeah, I mean, the first goal is to get everyone back in Australia, back training, get Joey running, you know, and get him healthy again and get his mindset ready, because, you know, when you and him are running together and pushing each other in training, that's when I think we'll see another jump in both your levels. Because I think you two work really well, because you realize, yeah, I've got to be best in Australia. That's one thing, but you want to be the best in the world. So you don't care if each other's beating, you know, you're beating each other in training. It doesn't matter, because you want to be the best in the world.
Yeah.
Like, whereas some people in Australia take offense to that, but it's like, dude, we're a small pond.
Yeah, we're pretty open. Like in Sydney, I think, yeah, I told them I'm going to take this lead, and then Canberra said he'll take it. So that's not too bad.
I love that because people ask me, do I organize who the leads out of you two? I said, no, those two, they just talk to each other. they decide. And that way it makes it a lot easier for me, because I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. And then how's training going to work going ahead with COVID?
Yeah, so I mean, I think what will happen is as more people get vaccinated and we get towards that 70-80% sort of range, there'll be less restrictions for people who are fully vaccinated. So, for example, you're fully vaccinated, Jess fully vaccinated. So I'm hoping stuff like that will happen. You know, I think we'll still have access, because elite athletes can still train. So I think we'll still have access to Lakeside, or get access to, you know, a different venue, or, you know, the gym access that you had before you left. So we'll make it work.
Yeah. And I get this question a lot, what we do for training, and I never know because you literally give me my sessions on the day. So just an overview of what we do and why do we always keep it consistent? Because I mean, we do speed every year. I think I average about 50, 60 Ks the whole year round.
Yeah, I mean, like I think traditionally people do a massive base and they build up their Ks and they do a lot of, I won't say slow running, but slower running. And you do that all winter and then you try to get fast again towards the end of the track season. And then you spend all summer trying to get fast and then you go all the way back to doing this big base. And I felt it was just easier if we kept your speed going all year round. And we also get that Saturday session, you know, when we do, you know, 6 by K or 4 by a mile. So you're always really fast and you're always really strong. And then we just throw the 800 meter stuff there sort of in the middle when the track season comes. You know, during the winter we do hills and some stuff on the grass.
Yeah.
But it's really only the Tuesday and Thursday that change for us during the year. And then, you know, the Monday and Saturday stay the same.
That works pretty well with me and Joseph. But how does that work with Jeff, who does like, I think he was telling me he was averaging 120 Ks a week.
Yeah, so Jeff does, well, I think he did some times where he was doing 120, but I think when he moved to us, he moved down to about 100 and down to 80 K a week. Yeah. I think the intensity of our track sessions are quite hard. And like you said, we're consistent. So we don't have easy weeks, hard weeks. We just sort of have the same, not the same week, because, you know, I change the sessions all the time, as you know.
Yeah.
But we try to keep it going and just trying to build on each week and make each week a little bit harder and harder and harder until you get to the summer and you're flying along. So you might start your mile reps at, you know, 4 in 5 minutes. And then by the time the summer comes, you're doing them in, you know, 4:40. So it's not, we don't really change the sessions. You're just getting them, you're getting better at them and you're doing them a little bit harder.
And what about gym and Pilates? I know I do one Pilates session a week, two gym sessions a week. How important is it? And do you think that was a change for this year?
Yeah, definitely. I think gym was one. I mean, you've done gym for a while. I think you've been consistent in gym. But I think Pilates actually made a big change for you guys. You know, it's difficult at the start because it's such slow movements and it feels like you're not doing anything. But then after you do one or two classes, you realize how hard it is and how much you're actually working. So I think your athlete's mindset is always fast is better, you know, quick, powerful. And Pilates is not that. Pilates is slow, controlled movements. And I think it's hard at first to realize what benefits you're getting out of it. But, you know, you saw it after a while. It's actually quite tough.
Yeah, KX Pilates actually wants the whole Fast Eight Stroke team on a session. So we have to organize that sometime.
Yeah, and I've done Pilates before. You know, my friend opened a Pilates studio 15, 16 years ago. And I hate it because I'm not very flexible and I found it really hard. So it's probably those things you find hard that are the most benefit for you.
Mm-hmm. And because Joe and I always go overseas, and is the goal to peak at the Australian season or overseas or had, I don't even know these things. I just run.
Yeah, no, it's funny because I remember a session we did at Gosh's on the grass and you guys are like 3 or 4 reps into the session and you said to me, how many reps are we doing? sometimes you guys start the workout and you don't even actually know what you're doing, which is really good because some athletes sit there and stress about it for days and days, you know, on and you guys just start and then ask me how many we're doing. I think what I try to do, I think my philosophy is just learning from all the mistakes I made when I was running. You know, I was nowhere near as good as you guys. I ran 147 and 340, so it's okay, but it's not world class.
You still hold the record. It's got a record.
Yeah, for the 1500, but you guys have smashed that.
But with Luke and Jeff in the team now.
Yeah, it's pretty tough.
Yeah.
But I think I did too many 800 meter pace sessions. You know, my coaches and, you know, I had a number of coaches. We might do 2 or 3 800 meter pace sessions a week for 3 months, and you guys don't do that many hard 800 meter pace sessions. Typically in the Australian season, we might do 3, and during European season, you might do a few more, but we don't do too many of them. And I think that's probably our secret, is that everyone thinks we're speed based, but we do a lot of stuff either side, and we just sprinkle the 800 meter stuff on there when it's time to go.
What do you think we could run a 400 in? I said Joe could run like 45. Someone asked me the other day.
100%. If we've got Joe's quad sorted, right? You know, because Joe's on 144.21 and he's had this quad issue since 27, or ever since he's really joined me. He did it in high school doing that 400 hurdles. And his key is that he's probably a quick, really quick. You know, he could run 45. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him get a baton and run 44 in a relay leg, because if he got a flying start and was just flying along, he'd run 44 point. But the quad issue is always holding him back, you know. So every time we try to do those speed sessions, he gets a little niggle here and there. But yeah, definitely Joe could run 45, maybe 45.7 out of blocks, 45.8.
Nice.
And you, yeah, no. I mean, you've run a 500 and you've gone through in 46.7, you know, just before in Rio when we were in Florida. Yeah, and I think you went through 200 and I thought to myself, he's not going to finish. And then you ran, I think you went through 33 through 300. I thought, there's no way you're finishing. And then 46.7, and you did. You ran, you know, 59 for 500, and it was awesome. But yeah, you should be able to run 46 point.
What about the endurance side, 1500?
Yeah, I mean, you and Joe, and I come on, you and Joe, but you and Joe are lucky because you only do 50K a week, but I think people don't realize that you do only weigh 61, 62 kilos, and you're so light, and you're actually quite strong for that 61 kilos. And your endurance sessions are really good. Like both of you run, you know, sub 11 around the town, which is pretty good. And you, now you've got those new Adidas super shoes. You probably run 10:40 for a lap of the town, maybe even in the 10:30s. But you guys should be able to run 335, 336 without even changing our training. I think if we train for it, you'd run a lot quicker. But I think you can run 335, 336 if you jumped in a race in Europe and you're fit.
Is the plan to run a little bit more, 1500s or 400s for next season?
Yeah, I think we've always talked about, I mean, particularly you and I, we've talked about running more 1500s. I think you've done one. I think the most you've done is two in a season. I think you ran...
Yeah.
I think you ran Box Hill at the time and then you ran Hunter. I think you ran a PB in both. And then you ran 342 PB this year and you've run, you know, 401 mile. But again, it's only like you normally at the beginning of the track season, we do a 1500. I think if you did a few more of them, you'd run really well. And I think if you get to a race like Nationals, maybe not when Stewie's going out there and running 334 pace, it might be a bit different. But in a competitive, you know, normal national type race, you'd be really dangerous.
Yeah. And then Tokyo. So what was the expectations heading into Tokyo? I mean, I had my own expectations and I think we spoke about it at the start of the season, but we never really spoke about it after that.
No, I mean, clearly the goal, if you're going to Olympics, the goal is to make the final and you were training for that. That's what the training was geared towards. And I didn't think we needed to talk about it too much because I knew we were both on the same page. And that's what you wanted to do. My main concern was just, I wanted to see you run well because I know we've been to three championships before and, you know, 2016, 2017, they went great. 2019 at Doha, even though you didn't make it past the first round, I think you ran really well. You ran 146.9.
That's interesting because I think 2019, I wasn't probably in shape as I was in 2016. And...
No, exactly. Yeah. So I think, but the way you ran, you're aggressive. You ran at the front. I think you were leading with 100 to go and you just died and you had some injury, you know, little groin niggles and stuff like that. So I saw that even though you didn't make it out of the first round, I saw that as a massive improvement on the previous championships. So I knew if you went there with the same mindset and just ran the way you've been running all year, you'd run really well. Did I think you'd run 144.13 in the heat? No way in the world. I knew it was going to be fast. Like I knew you had to run fast, but in my head I was thinking, you know, 145 low. But 144.13, nah, I would have bet good money that you wouldn't run that quick.
I didn't think that either. Like if I knew, I would actually try to run 143. Because
yeah, and I think Bosse had some choice words to say to Jeff when they were in the call room when they saw that first round, and he thought, you know, basically he said Pete's made this hard for us now. And you know, Bosse, he's honest. So that's why we love him.
He is very honest. He said, when we didn't get into, I think some meet we didn't get into, he said, we're not respected, my man.
Yeah, that's when you didn't get to Monaco, yeah.
Yeah. What about the semifinals? That was going to be the hard one.
Yeah, semifinals always, I mean, and you look at the semifinals this year, there were 16 guys around 144 across the three semifinals, you know, and, you know, 144, Rowden didn't make the final here around 144.3. So
we went in ranked 27th or something.
Yeah, you ranked 27th. So realistically, you had no realistic shot of making the final.
But Sportsbet definitely didn't think so.
I think you're paying, if I looked at it, I think you're paying like $92 or something, $91, something ridiculous. But what you did do is you ran the same race you've been running all year. You put yourself in the top two, you pushed it down the back straight, you put pressure on a Rop, especially before 600, you put good pressure on him before 600. And then you weren't afraid to take the lead before 100 to go. And, you know, and the last 100 was tough because everyone was coming at you, but still you held your form. You could have easily broken, they could have all gone past you, but you did, you held your form and, you know, had a cheeky little finger wave across the line.
Yeah, slowed down. And then the final, because we haven't really spoken about the final, what do you think we could have done better?
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot and I probably think about it every day still. I don't know what we could have done any better, to tell you the truth. I think the only thing if it was being really critical, like we got to 200 quite quick. I think you're like 24.9 and then it really slowed down. You got stuck in between Rotic and Amos. I think Amos was on your outside and that 100 was really slow. It was 14.8 seconds. And I know we talked about it was slow, go with 500 to go. And I think the next 100 between 300 and 400 again was like 14.5. So maybe if we did that a little bit quicker, made that 13.5, it would have stretched the field out a little bit and the guys might have broken. But it's hard to tell, Rotic and Correa, they were always probably a step ahead of you at this stage and they're both around 142, 142.0, 142.5. So they're very good athletes. And to think we could beat them, it's tough. It's a tough ask. But we could have maybe run a different way and got a bronze medal. So it's hard. I think the way you ran was the best way to try to win the race. If we're just trying to win a medal, we might have run it a little bit different.
Would have ran from the back or?
Well, it's kind of hard. I think you would have just stayed in second. It's kind of hard because you see what happened to Murphy. Murphy got stuck at the back and was running wide the whole way and came last. Or this last, I can't remember. I keep forgetting there was 9 in the race. But I don't know how we could have run much different. And, if we had talked about it in January and said, Pete, you're going to come fourth at the Olympics, you would have said, bullshit, no way, JR, and now we're disappointed with fourth Olympics. So it kind of shows, the massive transition you've made over the last 6-7 months.
But you said once, we have the ability to be consistently in the top 10 in the world. Is that top 10 in terms of times? Or because racing is completely different than times. Like I don't even think I'm in the top 10 in times at the moment.
No, you're 15th at the moment, but you rank 9th. You rank
in the world rankings.
Yeah, rank 9th in the world rankings. and you rank 15th on times. But again, you haven't been in a really fast race yet. I mean, the Olympics, they were fast, but they weren't, Monaco or, Diamond League sort of fast race. So I don't think that your rankings are reflective of, your abilities.
Yeah.
But again, I'll stand by it. You and Joe both have the ability to be ranked top 10 in the world. And once you're ranked in the top 10, you give yourself a chance to get in these fast races. And you also, you then learn how to race these top guys and it gives you a better shot at making the finals more consistently.
Yeah. And then going into next year, we have like Com Games, World Champs. Is the goal to do both of them? Do one, focus on one?
Yeah, I think I don't want to disrespect the Com Games because they're amazing championships, but if you could choose one to win, you choose the World Champs to win every day of the week.
And that's first,
so you
right?
focus every yeah, you focus everything on that. And then you got the Com Games after that. And the Com Games is only 2 rounds. It's only a heat and a final. So it's not like it's going to be this massive workload on you. You can do 2 races in, I think it's 2 weeks later. So it's not really, it's 5 races over 2 or 3, 2.5 weeks. It's not a lot. So I don't think it's too much to ask, but the goal will be world champs.
So there's 4 of us right now going for the same spot. There's only 3 spots. Do you give race plans for nationals, say?
Yeah, well, I do give you race plans and I talk to you, but I always just give it to you individually. And then if you guys want to talk to each other about it, then that's up to you guys. I always just think of the best way. For example, if you're racing Brad Mathis, even though he's a New Zealander, but you guys race each other a lot. If you're racing Brad Mathis, I give him the tactics, the best way that he can win the race. Mm-hmm. And then I give you the tactics, the best way you can win. And then the result comes, whatever it comes, if you both run that way and you cross the line together, that'd be awesome. But yeah, and it is, you know, racing is whoever's feeling best on the day. You can both be really fit, but someone's always feeling a little bit better on the day. And you've seen that with you and Joe when you both train together and you have those really close battles, you know, and you're a couple of hundredths apart, which is awesome to watch. It's nerve-wracking, but it's awesome to watch.
Yeah. And then one of the other questions I actually wanted to know was, we've got a new member. Do we have a female number now?
Yes, we do. Do you want to introduce her? Well, no, she's not there.
She's not.
No, but Benderi, yeah, Benderi and Boyer, and I think she's an exciting prospect. Clearly got a lot of talent. She can run 51 for 400, and she's keen to move up to the 800. I had a discussion with her, 10 days ago or whatever, just after, during, towards the end of the Olympics or just before she went to quarantine. And my goal for her is that she actually gets better over 400 and runs the 800. So, I want her to run 50 seconds for 400 and be able to run 1:56, And I think when you look at a Thing Mu and just how the way she runs, she can run 49.4 and 1:55. She can probably run 1:53. But I think the 800, you've got to keep some of your key strengths. And if you get too far away from her 400 speed, she won't run as well. That'd be difficult because, I haven't coached a girl at that level before, but, it's 800 meter running. It can't be that difficult.
And how is she going to fit into the team? Because, doesn't she need some girls to train with at the same time?
Yeah, and that's one thing I'll look at over the next few weeks to see who she can, whether it's another girl to train with or if it's another, a 2 minute or 1:55, male runner who can train with her. So I think the lucky thing of being a female athlete is you can always find someone at your level to train with. Yeah, you can find someone, most, not disrespecting, but there's a lot of high school athletes who can run, 1:55 and be really beneficial in training. When you get down to 1:43, it's pretty hard to find training partners. You guys are really lucky at the moment, but yeah, I think we can do that. And as you know, we work really well with a number of other groups. Peter Fortune's group, we work really well with, and Kat Bissett's in that group. We work really well with Ned, and Lyndon Hall.
Lyndon can keep up stuff on the long reps.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's the problem. Lyndon's probably not the best female to train with because I personally think she's the hardest training female athlete I've ever seen in Australia. And, on those Saturday sessions that she's right, pushing the pace right behind you or sometimes in front of you. So she's very tough.
Especially when you're out of shape, she loves to take advantage.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Everyone does. Everyone likes to take advantage when you're out of shape. I think she'll do some of our sessions. Clearly she'll do the speed session on Monday, but there'll be a lot of sessions that she does a bit differently to you guys.
And not a lot of people know you have a full-time job. And that's why we train out five after work sometimes. What's the main motivation?
For me as a coach or?
As a coach, yeah.
Yeah, I love the 800. I've always liked the event. I somehow fell into the 800s when I was in high school and never run before and then just ran 800s. I have no idea why I ran them. And I've always been interested in it and it's just something I've been passionate about and that's why I enjoy coaching you guys. I'd love to be a full-time coach and, so we could train, maybe during when it's daylight in the winter. The scene in Australia is that coaches don't make a lot of money, if any. And so you have to work full time. I'm really lucky that I can get away from my job at 5 o'clock and then come down the track and meet you guys. Cause I think we catch up 3 or 4 times a week, every week. So it is a big ask, but it's something I love doing. And I'm lucky that my wife, Bridie, is really supportive because I do spend a lot of time away from her, but I think she sees how passionate I am about it and how much joy I get seeing you guys run well.
And now with the baby, how are you going to fit all that together?
Yeah, it's going to be tricky. So the first thing I'll do is teach Archer how to call splits. So I'll make my job really easy because I can stand at 400. He can stand over at 200. So he'll be able to call splits. And I think the first words he'll learn is hurry up, Mathis. So we'll teach him. Yeah, but I can imagine little Archie sitting in the back of a bike, with his stopwatch, calling splits on a Saturday as we ride around. Thing too fast, bowl, slow down.
Slow down.
Poor kid.
Is he already planning to run the 800s in the future?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, if the Olympics are here in 2032, he'll only be what, 11, so maybe that's too young for the Olympics. So maybe we have to go for the 2040 Olympics. I don't know. And 32, 30, yeah, 2040. But yeah, who knows what sport he wants to play.
Your top five 800 runners. Who are they? So it goes me now.
Yeah, Dang. So you're number one. Yeah, Joe Dang, then Rory at 144.40. Then Jeff 144.8. And then you got Guy Learmonth here in 145.57. You know, he's run 144 before he came to me, but he ran 145.5 with me. And then you got Brad Mathis 146.0, and you got Dylan Stenson 146.6. Wow. Alex Pedos, you know, here in World Olympics, he set national record there, 147.26. So, I mean, yeah. I think that would surprise a lot of people, because when he first came to us, he was a 151 runner.
151 guy.
Yeah, now he's running one. Now he's quicker than me. I can't believe it.
And he was stuck in the Cook Islands for a while.
Yeah, he was. You know, he was training with some rugby players that jumped out and helped him in training sessions. They were good for the speed sessions, but not much else. But yeah, he's lucky that in the Cook Islands they do have a rubber track, so he could still do his track sessions. But apart from that, he was well and truly isolated there on that island.
And how difficult is it to coach guys since it's all online at the moment?
Yeah, so I'm really lucky with Guy. His brother is amazing. He's so supportive and gives up a lot of his time for Guy. He'd do anything for Guy. You know, if he needed to run through a brick wall to make Guy's session easier, he'd do that. Yeah. So it's amazing. You know, we have a really good communication between the three of us. You know, and sometimes Jack, who's Guy's brother, and I will have a conversation off on the side to make sure we're both on the same page. So we can be firm with Guy sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it works really well. So it's, you know, Guy would love to come to Australia and train with us. And I think if we weren't in this COVID environment, he would have been there last summer. And I mean, still thinking about coming this summer, but obviously COVID is probably the key stopper for that.
Yeah. So you have so many different athletes. Like, I know me and Joe are kind of similar. Everyone needs different things. So what type of leadership do you take? Like, how do you communicate with all of us differently? Because I know you do it pretty well. Just with me and Joe, you're pretty relaxed. And then like, we don't even need the time sometimes. But at the same time, sometimes we're away, we don't communicate too well. And
Sometimes when you're away, sometimes you don't communicate too well, to chase you guys down.
Yeah.
But it's just matching the communication style with each athlete. Like, sometimes you have to be a bit firmer with some of them. You know, probably, you know, when, you know, with, like with Mathis, for example, he thinks about things a lot and wants to know the sessions coming up well in advance.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it benefits him not knowing what sessions are coming up, because then he doesn't stress about them too much. You guys, like I said, you and Joe are pretty easy to turn up and do the session. Yeah. And Mathis does the session too, but he probably stresses about a bit too much. Mm-hmm. And he tends to worry about things when things aren't going well. So probably have to be a little bit firm with him sometimes. And again, then Jeff joined this year and I had to learn how to communicate with him, because, you know, Jeff's someone that, you know, I used to race against, or when he was 19 and I was 34, 35, you know, that's when I first met Jeff. So I've known Jeff for a long time, but we've never had that relationship of athlete and coach. So it was something to learn how to communicate with him. And he's been good. You know, he was actually calling me before every race this year. So he'd call me between the warm up track and the call room, and we'd have a quick chat. So that was good.
Yeah, that was the funny thing. He would tell me, I'm going to call JR. I said, I've never even called JR for a while.
Yeah, but everyone needs something, you know, different before a race. You know, some people, you might think if you call me, you think, oh, JR thinks I'm nervous.
I think if I call you, I'm stressing about something.
Yeah. Whereas Jeff just likes to talk about things and just confirm things. Yeah. And I think he just likes that because he takes his mind off the actual race for, you know, a split second.
It's so professional. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
I think it's the best thing about our group. We do have so many different personalities, but we all work quite well. You're all different, but, you know, when it comes to training, you all want to help each other and, you know, you do anything for each other.
And your training, do you take a lot of inspiration from other groups and stuff?
Everything we do is stolen, borrowed from another group. You know, maybe the concept of the speed and the endurance that we do all year round, something that I've come up with, but the sessions we do, I've, You know, I've either done them myself, probably most of them I've done myself, or I've seen other athletes do them over the years. You know, I've got notes that of conversations I have with athletes. I was looking at notes the other day. I had a conversation with a British athlete in 1997 at a bar in Melbourne. And as soon as I got home, I wrote down everything he told me that he did in training on a little, like a little A4 card. I've still got that card of all the sessions he did and the recoveries and everything. So I look at all those type of things, you know, that I've collected over the years, not knowing that I was going to be a coach, but you know, now I can look back at them and think, oh, that's pretty good. Let's do that session. I like that.
I remember you said every session you've given us, you've kind of done before.
Yeah. And the, you know, the sessions that you guys have done that haven't done it as well as me, but I think because we have a really good balance, that it doesn't matter that you're not you don't have to be really good at this just one particular session, because you do every session quite well. And that's what I think is important, because I got really good at doing 800 meter pace sessions. I could do them really hard, but I probably couldn't have done the endurance sessions as well as you guys and the speed sessions, you know, all at the same time. At different times in my career, I could do both as well, but not at the same time.
And lastly, overview of the year. Successful, could be better, or it needs still a lot of work?
Yeah, it's still, it's got, I don't know, and you might have a different opinion to me, because it's, when I watched the race and I saw you come fourth, I was disappointed. And I'm probably still a little bit disappointed, but I do think that once we get towards the end of the year, I'll be, you know, more proud of what you've achieved and stuff like that. Because I just think it was, there was such an opportunity there that, it wasn't unthinkable that you could win that race. Like, if to me, I still believe that if we had got things, you know, a little bit different, you might have won that race. And that's hard to just let go of. But yeah, I think it's been an amazing year. You've been successful. You've won 12 of your 16 800s this year. So you've been really consistent. So it's been your most consistent year ever. You've run 144, I don't know, a bunch of times. Yeah, I think you've run 144 seven times in total. You've run it four or five times this year.
Is this the most we've ever raced?
Yeah. I mean, you look back at 2017, 2016, you had about seven races.
Yeah.
You know, in both those years. And now you've run 16 800s, you've run a 1K, 15. And you've run a 1500. Yeah. So you've had, what's that? That's 18 races and you've still got two or three to go.
What's the ideal number of races?
Yeah, so in my head, it used to be that you'd run your best 800 after about eight.
Yeah.
But I think what we've done is, you know, we've run a few races in Australia, then we have this bit of a block where we go back and do a bit of base training, then you come out and do a bit more. And, you know, and some of those races at Nationals, I know you ran three races at Nationals, but were they hard 800s? No. You know, I know, not disrespecting the others in the field, but you didn't run hard in any of those 800s. And we probably train harder than that 3 days in a row. So even though there's 300s there, we can't really count them because they weren't that hard. So that's I think we've got to look at too, the quality of the races you did. Even that first race at Canberra where you ran 147 or whatever, it was a slow first lap, you just kicked home. So you've done a lot of races, but some of them have been quite easy for you.
Yeah. And bonus question. 1K race, fast eight chip club. What time? We won't even say who's gonna win, because we're not going to choose favorites. What time do you think we could
pacemaker run? Or no pacemaker?
Pacemaker. And
yeah, so pacemaker at 800 and nice and even would run 2:14.
We might have to set that up.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, you and Joe run 2:17 in training and, you know, twice, maybe 2:18, 2:17.
Yeah, definitely 2:17. 2:14 at the Australian season or European season?
Well, remember you ran 2:17. Yeah, you ran 2:17. It was 11 degrees. It was cold. Fitzy paced you, and we probably went way too quick the first lap. I think we went 52 or something, and then you're on your own after there. So, yeah, I think if you got into a race in Europe, you guys could. I think we could do it in the Australian season if we did a track session and we had the right rabbit, you could run 2:14.
Might have to set it up.
Yeah, definitely.
Because we probably won't be racing too much other than Nationals next year.
Yeah, it's exciting next year. We can try different things with you. You can run more 1500s, as you said. You've got the luxury now that you've got a world champs qualifier already. We've got two of them. So you don't need, or I think you got three of them actually. So you don't need to worry about chasing the time anymore, which is probably the first time in your athletic career that you haven't had to worry about chasing a crime. I remember how stressful it was in 2019 trying to get that bloody time.
And you had that
shambles of a race where you ran 150 and then you're in your slowest time of the year. And then the next race you ran 145. It was just so inconsistent. And this year, the best thing, you've been so consistent. So I think next year is going to build on that and be consistent. Well, you're already a consistent 144 run. I don't know. Maybe you have to be a consistent 143 run and then.
But everyone else in the group still needs the time.
That's right. Everyone else does. I know there's this point system, but you look at the 800 this year, no one got to the Olympics on points. Everyone had the time. So the goal, you've got to run 145, under 145.2 to make the time. That's the thing. But you guys are all capable of doing it. You and Joe, definitely. You know, I think Brad was definitely in 145 and a half shape this year. Mm-hmm. Just got injured the wrong time. Yeah, there's never a right time to get injured, but got injured the last minute and probably made a mess of that first race in Brisbane where you ran 144.8. And he sort of just let you guys go and didn't commit early. Because I think sometimes you benefit from a hard race and the next week.
I was thinking that was his best, that race. And then the next one was just kind of uneven. And he committed for that one.
Yeah, and he made a really hard move. I mean, you ran faster the second one, and he made a hard move to get up onto you, you know, between 600 and 700. So, you know, no wonder he died in that last 100. But I think if he had done that the first week, and then the second week, he would have been, his body would have been a bit used to it, and he would have run under 145.5 that. And, you know, would have had a completely different view of how his season went.
What's the com game standard?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really tough for both Australia and New Zealand. So, because there's a quota system on the number of athletes you can actually take. So it's not per event, it's a quota of the total number of athletes you can take to the Commonwealth Games. Yeah, so I've got a feeling that the Com Games standard will be for New Zealand will be harder than the World Champ standard.
What?
Yeah, and even the Australian standard might be a bit tougher too, because you know, we had the luxury in 2018 of having a home Com Games and we could send a massive team. It's not going to be as we won't have that same luxury, and the standards would be pretty tough.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think so. From what I've heard, New Zealand's, they want to set the standards that you can finish top six of the Com Games, and Australia, I've heard they're looking that they want you to finish top four. It's pretty tough. Yeah.
I mean, I just saw the rankings.
You're third in the Commonwealth, so you're fine.
Yeah, no Polish in Poland. but there is the Kenyans, there is Amos, there is Marco, Rob, Brendan McBride. It's not any
easy. But Amos has never beaten a fast state track club runner in a major championship. So we've got him. Amos, if you're listening, we've got you covered.
It's like that.
No, because Brad
and Monaco. Joe beat him. King of Monaco.
Yeah, that's right. You've got to get there to Monaco. Hey, just a quick question for you. How do you think the season went?
It's not over yet. I haven't even watched the final of Tokyo yet. I don't really want to watch it yet until I stop running into the season. But yeah, I wanted to win, so I was disappointed, which was good because I just kind of stayed content and then just focused on the next few races. I think if I won, I would have been celebrating a bit too hard.
I think if you won, we'd say season over, which kind of hard though, because you're Olympic champion and you want to make some money.
Yeah,
you're Olympic champ. You're still Olympic champion next year.
Yeah, fourth. I don't know. Fourth is just a weird. Weird number, because you didn't win a medal.
Yeah,
you're just in the finals. I know it's kind of tough to say because we've never been to the finals before, but still, when you get to the final, you still might as well make the most of it.
Yeah, 100%.
So I don't know. Yeah, I haven't thought about it too much. I'm kind of at peace not thinking about it.
It is hard because it is. You don't want that to be weighing you down.
No,
like you've got more races, and you know you're clearly in good shape. So.
Yeah,
it's not like you're trying to go there and revenge coming forth.
I've got a long flight home. That's when I'll think about it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So it's a minute 45 and the flight's 20 hours.
I'll download it. I've probably watched the heat in the semi so many times, but I haven't watched the final yet.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
And what about the whole season as a whole?
The only thing different is I was stressing about chasing times so early. I'll just probably change that next year. Like, I don't think you need to chase too many times. I think Raf de Bell had an article the other day and said it's like not really about times. And I went into Europe. I know there were so many people faster than me, but I didn't feel like there were better. So that's why probably Tokyo went a bit better. Like on paper, there were so many people faster, but I wasn't scared of them. Mm. So I was more happy about that. And then running 145s and here and there, 146s being bad races, and Nationals was probably the slowest.
Yeah, it was. You and the your three slow races. I think you're in 1.9 in the final. But yeah, I think you only ran 780 meters because you jogged that last 20.
Yeah.
But yeah, Nationals was slow. But again, like you said, that's learning about racing. You're in a box. You're in a box. You know, there before 400, you got out and you still won. So that's more important. You can learn more from that than you can running.
Yeah.
45 in Queensland.
Yeah, but it's been a good season. Yeah, it's been pretty strong from the 15 all the way to the 8. It's been nice. So yeah. I'm looking forward to next year. I want to start a season with like 145, 144. You know, I know this year we started in Canberra. I think it was 147.
Yeah, again, it was a bit of a slow race. And the next one, you're 145, 21, were you?
Yeah, I think we can run
23.
I think we can run 144 in the Australian season and just continue getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think we've spoken about this a few times, but I'd love to see you guys run 144 at Box Hill. We go to that track a lot. We like that track. It's there's, you know, lots of your friends and athletes that watch you run are there. It'd be nice to run 144 there and just show everyone that, you know, it can be done right there.
Yeah,
and exactly. We know I can because Stewie's run 13.05 there, run a train 10K record there. So there's no reason why you can't run faster Box Hill.
Yeah, we just need a pacer and all of us. I guess we can almost have a whole 8 people from Fast 8 Track Club in a race.
Yeah, that's the beauty. Why travel all around Australia and risk getting affected by COVID?
Yeah.
We can just stay in our own little bubble.
Yeah. Like, I mean, if Luke's now with us, so that Brisbane race was myself, Luke, Brad, supposed to be Joe, Raj.
And Jeff was supposed to be there, yeah.
That's a whole field. And then Alex Beddoes and stuff.
Yeah, I think we're really lucky because, like you said, I'm not a paid coach. We're not a professional, you know, I've got the Fast 8 Track Club. It's not a professional track club like there are other track clubs around the world. Yet we've still got a solid group. And I think, you know, our squad could rival any squad around the world at the moment, based off just, you know, a couple guys getting together and training. Basically, you know, it's kind of we're like amateurs, but if you
had internationals wanted to come, Saul, he wanted to come. Isaiah Harris was saying he's keen to do some training.
Yeah, I know. I speak to Isaiah Harris, you know, maybe once a week we have a message.
Yeah,
you know, I'd love to have him join the group. And you know, it's tough, you know, because I think if we're in a different country and we had a bit more funding, we could probably do a bit more, you know. We could go on more training camps. I know you love going to training camps, but we don't really get that many opportunities. We could go, you know, I'm keen to see, you know, you guys go to altitude and do some stuff like that. But again, it takes money and money's tough sometimes.
Like South Africa.
Yeah, South Africa was amazing. Yeah. It wasn't great for the hire car we had. But apart from that, it was pretty good. Like I don't know. I actually don't know how we survived South Africa. We had no idea where we were going. We found these amazing runs. There was amazing wildlife. But I don't think we should have been on any of those roads. And particularly when we come out and there was guys with machine guns standing at the end of the road. There is no way we should have been in there. But
lucky we had you. Otherwise.
Yeah, and I was videoing the whole thing as I was driving.
Yeah, that's true.
If these guys get eaten, it's definitely on Instagram.
All right, that is all I needed to know.
Awesome. All right, well, Bowl, 30-minute run today and then track tomorrow.
I don't even know what I have today. But I had a day off.
No. No day off. Day off next week sometime.
All right. I'll get it done after this, probably. Cool. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, no rush.
Enjoy all your right. evening. And I'll see you on the flip thank side.
You. Thank you for having me, Sir Bol. It's been a pleasure.
No worries.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.